Attention listeners, on July 13th, WORT is implementing a programming time change. The Best of Gospel show is swapping time slots with Hmong Radio. Beginning on July 13th, Best of Gospel will be heard Sundays from 6 to 8 a.m. Central Time, and Hmong Radio will move to Sunday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time. The WORT Programming Committee oversees all programming changes. You may contact the committee with questions or comments by emailing pc@wordfm.org. As always, we welcome your feedback, and we hope this change allows listeners and volunteers to participate more fully in the WORT programs you love. Good afternoon. It's again the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I am Mr. Smarty Pants. Floyd is on assignment, and Mel, Ruby and I just went to visit him yesterday. Mel is on the mend from a bicycle accident that he had. And for those of you well-wishers that are wondering how he's doing just fine. And a little later in the show, I'm going to read a lovely card that someone sent to say thank you to Mel for his work and to wish him well for his recovery. With me today, you know, when Mel's not here, I mean, and no disrespect, but we got to get two people in the studio. That's all you need to know. So I'm blessed with the presence of Saga, who comes back, and she's been with us before. And then Elmer, who's been with us for the last couple of weeks now.
Yes.
And Elmer, I'm so glad you're here. And Saga, nice to see you back.
Hi.
So what are you up to, Saga?
Well, I'm going to get some sun today.
Oh, really?
Get outside, sweat a little. Yeah.
Are you a tanner or a burner?
I'm a burner.
All right, me too.
Full on burner.
Yeah, full on burner. Okay, very good. But you're going to do it anyway because that's what you do, right?
Yeah.
That's what
yeah.
you do. Now, do you slap on a lot of the lotion? And
oh, I'm going to get the lotions and potions, and my neighbor has a kiddie pool, so.
Oh, very good. So potions, what potions do you have in mind? I'm a little curious about that.
It's a tub of zinc.
You have a diving board or anything? Yes, yeah. Like you gotta gracefully jump in there and do little acrobatics in the water or something yeah. like that. That would be great. So a pool of zinc. Mm-hmm, excellent. Mm-hmm. Where do you get those, by the way? I'm kind of curious.
Amazon.
Of course you do. So I have to tell you, I'm a little verklempt this 4th of July, just to let people know. And maybe you are too, you at home.
I feel the same, yeah.
Yes.
Do you? Okay, yes. All right, very good. That's a generalized phenomenon. Now, what I normally do on the 4th of July is I get my Betsy Ross flag out, as you know, and mm-hmm. I hang it up, and then I put some music on and I march around the apartment. So, you know, that's what I do.
Amen. Yeah.
But I couldn't do it this year. I just, you know, America, the idea, it's not there for me anymore. How are you feeling about that, Saga?
You know, I was feeling so patriotic today that I went and read a bunch of Mother Jones articles.
Excellent. That's the real deal there. Yeah,
that's right.
And Elmer, what about you? Do you ever do anything on the 4th of July besides, you know, cook hot dogs or something?
Wow. I was thinking about all the 4th of Julys that I've done nothing. It was like, oh, it's a day off. I actually don't have to work.
Yeah.
I don't have to be anywhere. One of those rare moments where it's like, oh, I don't have to do anything, so I'm not going to. So that is also the American way.
Okay, the one thing I have to admit, I did do one thing today.
Oh, well,
one
okay.
thing I did. I read a speech about the 4th of July on the topic of the 4th of July by John Quincy Adams. But, you know, that's
gotcha.
Just kind of tip. I think everybody does that.
Everybody does that.
That's just normal stuff. So, you know, one of the things I wanted to do for the show while Mel was gone was to do a little bit of outreach to the community. You know, we have lots of people that listen to this show, and I thought it would be a wonderful idea. and you guys were so supportive of this. I really appreciate that, of bringing people in from the community. And we were wondering what we would call it. You know, we call our listeners the Mindless Minions, ironically, of course, because you're often very mindful. But we were thinking about the March of the Minions. That was... Yes. I don't know. That was something, you know.
And Minions' opinions, I think.
Minions' opinions.
You didn't want them to be, but you were like, that's
no,
too much.
No, we don't want their opinions. No. That's the last thing we need. There's enough opinions here for, I mean, I've got at least 5 or 6 on every topic. So,
right.
But we did think that Minion moments would be, Minion moments. And Elmer, I noticed that you thought of senior moments.
Senior moments. That's what I kept thinking of it as, like, oh, it's a moment when I know everything suddenly. Instead of having a senior moment, it's like, oh, I'm having a minion moment where I have 5 or 6 opinions about everything.
Okay, so, very good. And but Lainey and I, both Lainey are, of course, welcomer out front, our phone answerer and general person out there. She thought of precious moments, which I thought of too. And I don't know if you've ever seen one of those, but just want to know that we do have a guest for this first half hour, and I just want that guest to know, guest Ralph, by the way, that's Ralph here today, that Ralph, we're going to take a picture of you, and we're going to make a precious moment figurine.
Oh, I always wanted that. And make a little diorama of the station.
See how many children we can give diabetes to.
I would shop for myself at the Hallmark store.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So today with us is Ralph, and I've known Ralph for many years. I just want to say up front, that is full disclosure, known Ralph for a few years now. But I thought he'd be a good person to bring in for the beginning of this little experiment, because Ralph is Mindless Minion number 2. So wow. Mindless Minion number 1, you're out there. Kathy Liebarger, you know who you are. That's Mindless Minion number 1, but you are Mindless Minion number 2. Now, what did you do to deserve that great honor?
Loads of cash.
Loads of cash. There was that. Yeah, very good.
You know, actually, I'm not really sure. I moved to town here in '96 and found you guys kind of randomly while cruising down the Beltline, just flipping through stations, and this show came on. And it was a talk show that didn't offend my intelligence for once. Yeah, it wasn't some ridiculous in morning zoo show. I'm like, oh, this is pretty great, and kept up with it. And I'm not really sure what happened after that. I do have a Minion card somewhere. I mentioned earlier when we were off the air that it's in storage. I can't find it just yet. But
so you were found. You found us while you were driving down the interstate.
Yeah.
So was that when we had those signs to say "We'll laugh for cash"? Was that the? Is that when you found us?
The sandwich boards on
the sandwich
overpass.
Boards. Yeah,
that was it.
So Ralph, what do you like about WRT? I mean, I know there's the wonderful us, but you must listen to other programs on the station.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm more into the music side of things. So pretty much any kind of music program that starts in the afternoon and goes till about 3 a.m.
Do you remember the first time you pledged?
I don't remember the very first time, no. It was probably around 97, 98, something like that would be my guess.
Yeah.
And I think I got the card, I don't know when you first started doing that, 2000 maybe? I can't remember the exact time you had your first Minion cards out there.
Yeah. But,
and then, of course, the films came out, and all Minions are all these little yellow guys in toy stores, right?
Yeah, that's so crazy. We've been suing them for years.
Isn't it?
The top team of lawyers that we have here at WRT, I think they just filed the suit. But anyways. But, you know, I got to say that I pledged, I still remember the first time I pledged to WRT, because I was working a job. I worked in a lot of different jobs. I was working a restaurant job as a night manager, and I was counting the money at 2 a.m, and there were two guys that were doing a reggae show, and they were high as kites, and they were just like, hey, we know you're out there, we know you're listening, so you, that person, I thought, I know I'm the only person listening to this, so I know they're talking to me. So that's when the first time I pledged.
How do you feel about reggae after that?
I liked listening to it, actually. I was fine. I'm a little over-rap, but aren't we all? So, Saga.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, do you remember the first time that you listened to WRT?
You know, when I moved to Madison, I first started listening to WRT because the station aired Democracy Now!, and that's how I came to the station. Yeah. And then stuck around for all the other good programming, the music shows, the talk shows, the news. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excellent. So, Saga, you got any questions for this guy here? This man is Mindless Minion number 2.
Yeah. Let's get to know each other.
That's it. That's exactly what we want. We want you to be known. Bringing the community in here.
Be careful what you ask for.
Well, I got a question, Ralph. Do you play an instrument?
I do, actually. I'm a bass player.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I've been doing that since I was about 18. And I play currently in about 4 different bands in the area. Mm-hmm. And that keeps me both in and out of trouble. So it's a lot of fun. And I mean, this is a really wonderful community around here. Madison's got a very vibrant music scene, of course. And so it's been very fulfilling to play around, you know, here and in the surrounding areas.
Yeah.
So what's the funniest thing anyone's ever said to you when you were playing in one of these bands? Anybody ever said anything, say something amusing or interesting?
Please stop. No, I didn't get that. No, it's nothing in particular. I guess occasionally you have people trying to yell out things that they think you can hear, but you're kind of busy in the moment. No, I can't take a request right now. Sorry.
Do people request Freebird for you as a bass player?
About every other time. Yeah.
Does anyone ever throw their underwear at you on the stage? That often happens at the rock
concert. Not on purpose.
No. On accident.
Yeah, there have been some incidents.
I meant to hit the garbage over there, and I missed. Yeah. Oy, come on.
I do have to say, the Freebird thing has dropped off in the last 10 years, mm-hmm. thereabouts.
So it's a generational thing.
Yeah, it is. And
do you get Chapel Roan requests these days?
Oh, God, no. Thank God, no. We wouldn't have any idea how to play that. It's, the stuff we play is, I'm in both a jazz band and then a couple of Americana bands. Mm-hmm. And then another group that's all original stuff for the most part. And Chapel Roan doesn't fit into any of that currently. Maybe someday, but not
someday.
Right now.
Yeah.
Would you ever learn Freebird? Just to have it in the pocket.
The
it's been bandied about.
Yeah. The bands that I've been in have been like, we should just learn Freebird so that when it gets requested, we just stop and start playing it and see what happens and see if people like freak out or people are like, boo. Yeah, I play.
What do you play?
I play drums and play bass and play guitar.
Oh, wow.
You're a whole band.
I am a whole band.
Yep.
You have to clone me.
Have you learned Freebird yet?
It's not really that hard.
No.
I mean, the end of it is kind of weird. Like, it's all rocking and crazy, and the first part of it is actually kind of nice and soothing and kind of a nice song, and then it goes crazy, and I'm like, well, now you're all going crazy.
And it goes on for another half hour.
Yeah, and it goes on for hours, at least.
See, that's the fun of those, is that everyone's high, and so you're like, you can play it forever, but it doesn't seem like it's that long, right?
And I'm like, I like the first part, but I think people are really wanting the second part.
Yeah.
So maybe the band should just learn that heavy rocking part, and you just drop everything and go right into that part. And
enormous
then,
jam.
Yeah.
For forever.
Just like, you could do it.
So you know what they call a drummer who breaks up with his girlfriend?
Homeless.
Homeless.
Very good.
Yes.
I've heard most of those.
Yeah. So are there bass players? I mean, I used to play the viola when I was in the orchestra when I was a kid, of course. Yeah. And there's there are endless jokes about how useless violas are. Like, you know, the same kind of thing. Yeah, it's like, what if the entire, you know, viola section died? No one would notice, kind of thing. You know? But except for Wagner. Wagner's heavy viola. Anyway, so are there jokes specifically about bass players?
Well, do you know what the difference is between a viola and a bass?
No.
The bass burns longer. That's one on top of my head. That's the only one.
Yeah, do you slap your bass?
Well, it's been naughty, yeah.
I mean, I want to get into the
seems
personal.
A little private, yeah. Yeah,
to reveal everything on the show.
Slap at the bass.
I know that reference. actually a little bit, time to time if it feels right. But I'm also, it's really weird. I play right-handed, but I'm actually left-handed, so my right hand is not as dexterous as my left. And so I have to really work hard at that type of movement.
Interesting. Yeah. So how do you, if you do it that way, does it feel backwards to you then or something?
Not anymore, no.
Yeah.
Unless
you
I'm,
just do, you're kind of ambidextrous in that respect.
In that regard, yeah. I mean, I also, if I'm batting or golfing, which I never do anymore, that's right-handed, but writing and throwing things is left-handed. I tried. Can you imagine?
Yeah. I'm really digging into the horrifying details of your life here. Golf? Oh, my God.
I was really just more into the girl bringing the drinks along in the golf cart every once in a while.
That's a good point, yes. I used to go to bowling because they had beer frames. That was the only attraction for bowling.
See, now you're making me picture you bowling, and that's making me laugh.
That's...
Which hand do you bowl with?
Lefty. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have you tried it with your right hand?
Never have. Well, after some beers, yes. But I don't think we were counting anymore at that point. But
gotcha.
No, it's terrible for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's very strange.
So you do some things right and some things left.
Yeah.
And the people I know that are sort of in that zone we figured out you try everything in both ways because sometimes the other way is actually
better. Right.
Or easier or whatever.
Exactly. So. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, it was, you know, just a learning process. I kept, you know, growing up, and I mean, God, I remember kindergarten. I was trying to use the right-hand scissors. Until I got left-hand scissors, I had to learn how to use right-hand scissors, and now I can only use right-hand scissors.
Oh.
So I had the left hand beaten out of me. Because I was a kid, my dad's left-handed, and I would start doing everything, because he showed me like how to tie my shoes and all these little things.
Right.
And my mother was horrified, because I'm old enough to be from the generation that thought, if you do it with your left hand, then you know, you're Satan's minion. So,
yes.
That sort of thing. Yes. And I remember my mother screaming at me not to do that. There's like, I do actually drive, and this sounds weird, but I drive with my left hand. Like, I never put my right hand on the wheel unless there's an emergency. I always drive with my left
hand.
There's a bunch of little weird things.
You know, like you're supposed to use both, right?
Yeah, no, well, I don't. I just go along. I drive like a monkey behind the wheel. What can I say?
If you use your left hand, what hand do you flip off everybody else with, though?
Well, that I'm directing music.
You got the Wagner in the car, right?
Yeah, the Wagner. Got that Wagner cranked, and I'm flying down. The paint is coming off the car.
Flight of the Valkyries, and you're heading down the belt line.
Villagers are fleeing. Yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, you're the one.
Yeah, I'm the one.
I knew it.
So do you have any questions for me and Saga and Elmer about, I don't know, anything?
Anything?
Yeah.
Anything.
Jeez. Well, I'm kind of curious. You know, this is the first time I've been in here for this particular show. I have to confess, I've been in the studio for shows here in the past as a guest, as a musical guest.
Sure.
And one of those, one of the first ones, and this might be Poisoning the Well, what was for Craniac's show.
Sure.
So.
Well, the official party line now is that we are not allowed to make fun of Craniac. So we love Craniac.
Okay.
All right, well, no, we used to have this like teasing rivalry, and and we thought it was funny, and he thought it was funny, I think, up to a point. Mm-hmm. And then other people didn't get that we were being, you know, boy humor. So they didn't get that we were just being funny, you know, we actually like Craniac.
Yep.
And we didn't want to admit that on the air. You know? But then it got to be this thing where some of his partisans were kind of like, stop being mean to Craniac. And it's like, A, he's a big boy, and B, we don't mean it, you know.
Sure.
But
anyway. I think it's that you guys cut a promo, and and Mel did a little elbow at Craniac.
Yeah, he nudged him,
In promo, which I thought was funny, and you guys thought was funny, and John also thought was funny, but that was too much for the audience.
People don't always get irony. Some people have an irony deficiency, and there's tablets for that.
Yes.
But not everyone gets prescribed. So,
came in a Flintstone vitamin when I was young.
Flintstone one away, one a day.
Yeah.
Irony supplement. Yeah.
Barney Rubble.
Exactly.
But anyway, so going back to questions, I mean, you have tons of stories in front of you here, and I've never seen exactly your format.
That's actually fewer than normal.
Yeah, but you actually cut it out of the papers individually.
I cut them out of the papers. Yeah, just like back in the day when people would have scrapbooks where they would paste newspaper things in there. I like looking at the newspaper, and there's a reason for that. Mm-hmm. It's because it's the same reason why I have a face watch. Because I don't like digital. I'm very visual. Mm-hmm. I hated football for years. I still don't like it that much. But I didn't understand it until Companion forced me to go to an actual game.
Uh-huh.
Because when I'm watching it on the screen and they're just running across the screen and the numbers are going by, it means nothing to me. Yeah. I'm very spatial. And so when I look at a page, I can see everything on that page right away. And it all makes sense to me. And I can see what I want. It's much easier for me to inspect it. So I just cut it out like that. And I normally have sort of like, you know, politics and capitalism, as I was saying last week, and then sort of justice and science. Those are my kind of like go-to categories.
Right.
But the problem now is that politics and capitalism are just pretty much the same thing. I mean, they probably, always were. They just were kind of like, it was more hidden, you know?
Right.
But at any rate.
It's fun to watch the process in person for once.
So Saga, do you want to share some good vibes with this guy? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm feeling good vibes. I like the music scene in Madison, just going back to that. It's a good place to go hear some tunes. A lot of places you can.
Should she give her some advice?
Yeah.
Where should she go to something maybe she hasn't heard yet?
Oh boy, what are your tastes like?
Well, I like a lot of rock, indie rock. Down for some jazz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you been to many of the venues around town here?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I like the Baroque and the Atwood. And
sure.
Yeah.
Mm.
I go to the Majestic and High Noon
have
sometimes.
Have you been to the brand new Atwood Music Hall yet?
Mm-hmm,
I have not.
Mm-hmm.
How is it?
It's great. Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. It's a beautiful space. Three bars. Big orange ceiling.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Orange?
There are three bars in there?
There are three bars
in there.
Wow. No, that's what your phone gets when you go in.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like you are pretty knowledgeable about the scene anyway.
You just swing some swing music. Would she enjoy that, do you think?
I don't know, maybe.
Where do you play swing?
I play with a band called Caravan. Mm-hmm. We've been around for about, a little over 20 years now. Mm-hmm. And we do essentially what's called gypsy swing. Mm-hmm. And it's modeled after the guitarist Django Reinhardt. Mm-hmm. All acoustic instruments, two guitars, upright bass, and clarinet / saxophone. That band's been pretty active. We just played over at Mansion Hill, of all places, this small inn over on Pinckney Street, mm-hmm. and a building that was built in the 1850s, I think.
You guys like in the lobby of that building or like in the living room?
Living room area.
Okay, yeah. It's what it used to be, like the parlor.
Yes, the parlor. I've walked parlor, by that building many times. I think I saw that there was a show in there, and I was like, wow, I'm wondering where it was.
So you walk in, we turn to the right, and we kind of stuff ourselves in there.
How many people can you fit in there?
I think 30 total.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, that's healthy. Right. Yeah.
But it is very tight. But it's also nice because we don't have to bring any amplification. We play completely acoustically.
Yeah.
And that worked out really nice. That band, locally, we're not playing around here until, the Gypsy Swing Festival in September. That'll be out at Lake Farm Park. That's always a blast. Mm-hmm. So it'll be us and I think four or five or maybe six different other similar acts from around the country.
Alphonse there?
Alphonse is going to be this year.
He's there every time.
Absolutely.
He's like the mainstay.
Yep.
And Sims and Company. Yep.
Harmonious will be closing it out.
Yep.
It's going to be a blast. It's a new
location. Are they the ones that pretty much put that together?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sims is an old friend of the family here at Wart. Cool. And he comes on the air once in a while. I've had those guys on some jazz show in the afternoon. I'm trying to remember whose it was. Probably like pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I know Sims because I used to drive cab with him a long, long time ago.
Okay. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're always fun.
Yeah.
They've been around forever and still put on a great show. So looking forward to that festival.
Yeah.
So what would you expect to see in the future here at Mellon Floyd, Inc.? What is your the great Melco enterprise?
Melco,
is that what it is?
Well, I guess item number one, of course, is for Mel to get back in the saddle. We miss him obviously, and I wrote him. I wrote him at the Mel and Floyd mailbag at gmail.com address, and he wrote back almost immediately. And so he's
looking, got nothing to do. Right.
And he was happy to hear from me. He said, you know, it really lifts my spirits. So I encourage anybody else out there that would be interested to
Mel and Floyd mailbag, all one word, at gmail.com. And if you are interested also in the upcoming weeks, we've got some guests that are going to be coming in on the 11th and on the 18th. But if you'd be interested in, if you feel comfortable doing it and coming in, just having a little conversation, we'd love to have the community come in during this period of time because, you know, I think it helps me. It helps me lift my spirits. I miss Mel. You guys are great, but I just want to feel like, you know, we're kind of doing something. We're making something out of this that kind of fills in for Mel's absence because he's a big presence here.
Well, he's got big shoes to fill.
Yeah, big clown shoes. Yeah, you've noticed that.
Well, and you guys missed out on a public appearance because it was going to happen right after Mel's accident. So that's I think he also said we're not out in the community, so we should bring the community in here a little bit and try to like integrate that because you said you always have fun meeting the fans, which is
great.
Yeah. It's true.
Well, Ralph, I want you to stick around a little bit.
Sure.
But we're gonna transition a little bit to some other stuff, and then if you could be around for the second half,
absolutely.
We got another surprise guest that we're gonna bring in, and it's somebody that is known to you. So and they're not in your band.
Good. I see too much of them anyway.
Okay. So if you were just gonna go out and hang out with Lainey a little bit, and we'll call you back in just a little bit.
Yep. Sounds
Ralph,
good.
Thanks, this buddy. Is your life.
I just want to say thank you, of course, to Ralph. We'll be back. But I also want to say thank you to Patrick and Jan. And I'm not going to read everything here because some of this is personal. But this is Patrick and Jan. I love their card. It's the classic VW. You testify to this, folks. Yep. It's the classic VW bus with some flowers coming out of the top. Very nice for Mel. And it says, Mel, we human beings have amazing capacities for recovery. Resilience is everything. We look forward to hearing your voice. Very good.
Yeah.
And then that was from Patrick. And then Mel said, we were also remembering how it seems you were just recovering from knee surgery. Yes, Mel is aware of that.
Yeah, that was my first thought as well when he got hurt. It's like, oh, no.
Hope this recovery keeps going well. So that was from Jan. Jan wants to make sure that whatever positive wishes she sends out don't get misdirected to the other recovery. It's just like, we got two recoveries here. I'm filing that one under hip, okay? Not under the other one. And you were going to do a little get well something over here too,
yes,
Saga.
Tell
us what you're up to.
I have a special healing activity for Mel. This is a group activity. So, Elmer, I'll have you participate.
Okay.
And then Mr. Pants, I'll have you participate.
Oh, that sounds great.
So in the world of Dungeons & Dragons, there are attacks and weapons, and you use your magic to smite your enemies. And you can use your magic to heal your friends. So I am bringing my Dungeons & Dragons healing magic to the table to send some healing to Mel. So first we will cast Healing Word. So Elmer, you get to roll this dice. Here, I brought a bag of dice.
Oh, very nice.
And if you, for sound effect.
Should have brought a roulette wheel.
And Elmer is rolling 1d4. That's a four-sided dice. And what is the number on the top?
One.
Well, there's one heal to you, Mel.
Oh, only one?
One heal to you.
One heal. All right. So what is the increment power of each one? I'm just kind of curious. Like, is that like four cells or something? Yeah. You know? I mean, what is
it? It's four swords of healing.
No, I was thinking like the actual like physical part of his body. Like, okay, four cells are now just lit up and they're like, oh, groovy. Okay, so now what can I do?
Okay, so now we have another spell. This is a little more powerful. So, we have limited resources. We can't infinitely heal Mel.
Sure, of course.
So we'll start with, we've got the ball rolling with that one unit of heal, and now we have a prayer of healing.
Oh,
so,
I can do that.
So yes, if you would
channel
all.
So what do I do?
You are going to roll, and you are rolling 2d8s. Those are 8-sided die. And
I blow on them or anything?
Yeah.
Papa needs a co-host. And it's 6 and 5.
Okay, that's pretty good.
What does that mean?
So that is 11 units of heal.
Oh, really? And like, what is that going to do? Can you specify physical and mental? I think he's pretty good mental right now, but
let's focus on the hip. Let's focus.
Okay,
all
focus
that
on the hip.
All for the hip.
On the healing hip.
So, Mel, I know you're listening right now, so look down and see if your hip is glowing. If it is glowing with a supernatural light, then we know that it reached you. We're in the bunker here. We don't know. Yeah. Is the magic getting through these walls or not? I don't know. We got
to
figure it
out. We're trying
to
send it over the air. So.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a streaming magic, as it were.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Saga. Mm-hmm. That's so cute. So, here, I got a question for you about that.
Yeah.
So, you've been doing D&D now since what? You were a little girl?
Oh, no, I'm relatively recent to the
world.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. I started playing during COVID with a friend who was in my, you know, remember when you had a bubble and
bubbles.
It was really, you know, the early days when you were terrified to see anybody, but we had a little bubble and we would play Dungeons & Dragons every week.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. And then I kept playing. It's fun.
So you were not one of the people that like sprung for the sourdough or anything like that.
I skipped that phase.
Excellent. You know, I have to say that we used to have more interactions with some of our friends during COVID than we do now because people were bored. They couldn't go out and we would see them online all the time.
So we're
constantly doing things online with people. And we also found out during that period the vast number of functionalities that you can do with your screens to like, you know, have horns come out of your head and things, all sorts of odd things going on. It was very
true
fun.
Innovation.
Yeah, it was. It was. You know, it's sad, and Mel will testify to this too. I think we enjoyed that experience. It was just kind of like, yeah, we're just like safe here in our little, you know, little
just
zone.
Phoning it in.
We don't have to go out or do anything.
Somebody has
else.
To be here.
So anyway, I got a bunch of little stories here. I don't know whether I'm going to use any of them because we are coming up on our next guest here. But I do want to share one thing. We were talking, you know, the mass media is talking now, of course, about the impact of the Republicans' bizarre bill that just recently passed. I think probably the president has signed it by now. But, you know, there are a lot of things about our health system right now that are especially problematic because, of course, guess who wins? Capitalism every time.
Every time.
This was a letter I saw in the New York Times from a person by the name of Reese Morgenstern. And she was talking about she went to a routine visit to the eye doctor. Okay, so I assume they mean that ophthalmologist rather. Yes, an ophthalmologist rather than optometrist. And the ophthalmologist noticed that an eyelash on my bottom eyelid appeared to be poking my eye. And the person kindly said, I will remove this. So later the bill came, and apparently the removal of an eyelash counted as surgery.
Wow.
They billed Ms. Morgenstern for $335 to move her eyelash off of, apparently off of her bottom eyelid. So you got a system like that to go for. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's time to start saying we need some other system.
That's pretty criminal.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are coming to the up on the half hour here, so we'll do a little station ID. I'll let Elmer do that and then run some promos. Stop my heart from crying. Walk with me.
Walk with me.
Talk with me.
Talk with me.
And you'll know. Stop my heart from dying. Oh, I need you.
I need you. Ooh, ooh.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
The Catfish River Music Festival returns Thursday, July 3rd through Sunday, July 6th. Hosted by the Stoughton Opera House Friends Association, this free four-day event is now in its 11th year. Held at Rotary Park just outside the Opera House, the festival includes local food and drink vendors, a community raffle, and a marketplace of area artists and makers. And of course, music! The Opera House's largest annual fundraiser features Charlie Parr, The Jimmies, Davina and the Vagabonds, Jed and Company, Loving Cup, Don't Mess with Cupid, and Wonderfunk. Details and full schedule are at catfishrivermusicfest.com. The Catfish River Music Festival returns to downtown Stoughton Thursday, July 3rd through Sunday, July 6th. Keeping you festive all summer long, this is WORT Madison.
So we're back here at the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show, and for listeners, you know Mel is out right now. He's had a little injury on his bike. He was describing it to Ruby. Ruby and I went over there yesterday describing it, and it doesn't sound so great, but he's in good spirits, and he's on the mend. So in the meantime, we've decided to have the March of the Mighty Minions. We've had the Minion moments now, and in the first half, if you were listening, you heard... You heard our friend Ralph talking about, this, that, and t'other, which is really what we want. We just want people coming in from the community.
Especially the t'other.
Especially t'other. T'others. He's all about the t'other, yeah. So that was good. And now, he's Mindless Minion number two, as I was saying. He doesn't have his card anymore. But we're grandfathering him in, you know. It's just like those 90-year-old nuns that tried to vote and they wouldn't let him because they didn't have birth certificates. You're like a 90-year-old nun to us. We're letting you.
Thank you. That's exactly how I pictured it. Here today. Those habits are much cooler than they look.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I got to tell you. So I work at an institution where we do have nuns, and I just want to mention that the best Pope joke I ever heard came from a sister.
Good.
And
what'd you say?
She asked me. She said, "Do you know why the Pope never showers naked?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Because he thinks it's wrong to look down on the unemployed."
Oh. Ooh. Where's the sad trombone we need?
Also, I remember when Benedict became Pope, this is another sister said to me, "He's only the Bishop of Rome, he's not the boss of me." And I said, "I think you should check the org chart, because I think he actually is the boss of you." Anyway, enough about nun jokes. So what we have today here as our second guest is someone who is near and dear to my heart and also has been a fan of the show for, 25 years now, I guess? Has that been it? And you may have heard him in the past on the science show, back when we had a science show on WRT, because I believe you were a regular guest on that show, weren't you?
Yeah, actually, I was the most frequent guest for quite a while there.
Yeah, so you were the standby guest, and this is I've referred to many times. This is Companion.
Hello.
Companion. Welcome.
First time in this show.
Oh, really?
In our entire companionship. Yes.
Wow. So now we met at a show, didn't we?
That's right. That's right. And it was all thanks to Ralph. Ralph was a fan. and he said, "Oh, they're doing a live remote show." And so I just said, "Okay, well, I'll go." And we went to Rainbow Books and stood there for about an hour watching you guys do a show. I also have a book that it was a promotional thing for WRT, the 25th anniversary. So I don't know what movie. Did you get one of those books, Ralph?
I do. It's also in storage.
Okay.
He's got this big vault, kind of like an Egyptian pyramid.
So I brought the book up to be signed by Mel and Mr. Smarty
and
Pants.
Yes.
And so Mr. Smarty Pants signed it, asked my name, which I guess I shouldn't reveal, but I said Companion. And and he says, "Oh, Companion, I'll pay you cash money to change your name." and so that's what he wrote in the book. And
I didn't know that. That's great.
Yeah. and so
I love mixing it up with the fans. What can I say?
A week later, we bumped into each other and started talking, hit it off, and that was the beginning.
And that was the story.
Yeah. And I'd also like to point out that exact show was rerun on WRT this past January 18th, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I happened to be listening, and it was a hoot. Trying to remember some of that stuff.
Yeah, Gladys dug it out of the vault. And I was nervous because we were live. But it was, do you remember the guy that came in with the giant toothbrush?
I remember some guy in the costume. Do you remember that?
You don't forget a guy carrying a giant toothbrush. even 25 years later.
And I still don't think anybody knows why.
No.
Yeah. No. I think he was promoting good dental health, which it's a lesson to us all.
I seem to remember he just found it and thought.
That was Madison back in the day.
That's Madison weird. Madison 25 years ago. Yes, it's much more like
her. Hey, look, I found a giant toothbrush. I think
whatever. Stand in line.
It lacks some effect on the radio, but,
I'll keep it in case they take fluoride all the water and whatever.
Yeah. Hey, I got a story about that. Did you read that Calgary had taken the fluoride out of the water and now they've put it back in? I mean, this will never happen in the United States because we don't believe in like facts and things like that. But yeah, they took the fluoride out of the water a while ago, and then they realized that this was 2011 they did this, and then all these kids with like British teeth, and so they decided to put it back in. So
yeah, well.
The Big Book of British Smiles. So you're a scientist, aren't you, Companion?
That's right. Yeah. So I've been on the science show. I'm an astronomer, and I teach at nearby university.
Well, I'm a Virgo, so.
Yes. Well, I have had that mistake a lot. I was at a meeting once where I was saying to someone at a bar, I said, "Well, I'm in town for a meeting of astronomers." "Oh, cool! I didn't know you guys had meetings." And then he later asked me for my 1-900 number, and I realized, oh, this whole time he's not been thinking astronomy.
That's similar to having somebody yell Freebird at a musician.
Yeah, so I did actually just decide to go freelance and do an astrology forecast for him, because why not?
Well, when the sun goes down, some stars will be coming out.
That would be a great premium for this show. And
Companion doing your forecast?
Doing your forecast? Your astronomy forecast, yes.
I like the way you think.
Well, actually, I have a friend who is an astronomer, and her sister is actually a professional astrologer.
Well,
and they have very interesting like Thanksgiving conversations.
As Campagna knows, there's Johannes Kepler did this back in the 1600s, one of our earliest astronomers, true astronomers. And he did on the side, he did astrology because he knew where everything was going to be.
Yep. In the old days, astronomers made their cash that way.
Yeah. I've got a story along those lines. Years ago, I played in a big band that did a gig at some convention hall down in northern Illinois. And in addition to the band and the ballroom, right next to it was a kind of astrology convention / new agey crystals, blah, blah, blah. And there was a guy there. We were loading in. There was a guy setting up his booth. And, you know, the rest of them all had very stereotypical booze, like crystals and all sorts of weird stuff. This guy looked like he had just come off the farm. He was about 74 years old. And he gets to his little booth. He brings out this crystal ball, sticks it on a stand. And he puts out a sign, the Amazing Leonard. I'll never forget this. And I'm looking at him thinking, he's not going to get any traffic. This is ridiculous. We went and played the gig. And afterwards, I'm done and we're packing up. I look out. The line is going out the door for the Amazing Leonard. He was just a hit.
Was he good?
I don't know. I didn't talk to him.
Oh, yeah, okay.
No, but I'm thinking, Campagna, you might have a retirement plan.
Well,
we all need a retirement plan in the sciences these days.
Yes. I remember when they opened up, there's an auditorium on the Epic campus called Deep Space.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And when they inaugurated it, they decided to have, let's have some astronomers come. So they actually invited astronomers from the universities and had a whole thing of, you know, like basically science things and a table set up with astronomy. But when you came in, this is during their user group meeting, so they had lots of different kinds of entertainment. You came into the main hall and there was a sign with an arrow. One sign said, you know, astronomy exhibits, and the other sign pointed to clowns.
Where'd you guys go?
I wish to God I'd taken a picture of that.
Well, that whole campus out there is all space-themed. The buildings and the auditoriums and stuff, it's all, you know, I'm not sure why you think like you're leaving the planet when you go to Epic. You're just like ascending.
Yeah, so it was a TARDIS when I was there and just sort of lying out in the hallway. And so, it was a fun place to visit.
Companion had a complaint about one of their murals.
Oh, yes, that's right. So they actually had a representation of what's called the Hubble Deep Field. And it had been blown up into a giant display on one of the walls. And I noticed someone actually asked me from across the room, because that's the room where the event was held. I said, "What's that big red star in the middle of that image?" And I go, "Well, that's not supposed to be there." And it was a variable star called V838 Mons Cerritos. And it's
we're losing them.
and it's a very bright star. And the whole point of that images of galaxies, they were pointing in some place where there was nothing bright at all. It was just faint and galaxies galore. And it's like, that's not supposed to be there. And then I started noticing that there were all kinds of other things that had been added to that deep space wall to sort of pep it up. And not just things from the Hubble, but there was some galaxies from the Spitzer Space Telescope. And
that's what the PR guys were busy doing there.
And so I was like, what is going on with this image? I mean, this is like, what will improve the Mona Lisa? Blonde highlights. So I went around and, actually, I have former I have former students that work there, and actually I got them to suss out the story of how that whole thing had worked out. The problem was that the Hubble Deep Field, they had such a big wall that they actually repeated the Hubble Deep Field a couple times, and so they wanted things in so you wouldn't sort of notice that there was a repetition. So they basically added in a few ringers.
Frosted tips,
But I approved of the idea. I mean, it was a beautiful image, a giant wall, but yeah, it seemed a little bit weird.
So we've got the Vera Rubin telescope up and going, the observatory down in Chile. Why should people be excited about that?
Oh, my gosh. Why shouldn't they? So this is a telescope. It was astronomers actually will commission a report every 10 years. It's a decadal report where we fight over the priorities and it's like, what is the most important thing to build? Because, you know, these big telescopes cost big money. And the Vera Rubin telescope, now the Vera Rubin telescope, was one of the two top priorities of 2010. It was in that report. And it's now come to be. It's a telescope that can basically move across the sky really fast with the largest camera ever built, the size of almost a small car. And so it can take images of a large section of the sky really fast and then move on. So it can cover the entire sky visible from the southern hemisphere once every three nights.
Wow.
So if you can cover the entire sky once every three nights, you can just keep going back and back and back. You build up a super deep image, but you also can look for things that vary in time. So they've just released some of the first images. As one little thing they mentioned is they discovered 2,000 asteroids in their very first go. That's just the beginning. So there's 2,000 new asteroids. This sort of breaks the naming convention for astronomy, because asteroids, people who discover them get to choose the name, pending approval, because there is a committee that vets the names of asteroids.
So now they're all named Vera?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with naming all these asteroids. It's like, pretty soon you down at the bus station. Who wants an asteroid?
Saga wants an asteroid.
I'd take an asteroid.
I could just tell from the look on her face.
I'd take two or three.
Yeah, maybe they can raffle them off. I mean, if we're looking for funding, maybe this is a way to do it.
Maybe they could borrow the Minion naming convention.
There you go.
Yeah, yes. You could sell that.
Yeah, very good.
But this is really, in many ways for astronomy, this is the beginning of a new mode of operating, because this is petabytes of data. It's just
a
petabyte, which is, bigger than a megabyte, better than a gigabyte.
It's about when your dog bites you. It's a petabyte.
Over the years as an astronomer, I'm always in the habit, we've got an observation telescope, I'll download it to my laptop, I'll analyze it on my laptop, and then I'll, do something with it. There is no way. I mean, actually, one of the images they released last week, I said, oh, I want that. And so I went to the site, and I was like, well, it's 12 gigabytes to download. And I was like, I can't even fit that on my computer. So essentially, it's going to be the first real major mission that astronomers have done, where you just have to go to the data. So you log on to the cloud and you use other people's computers to process and analyze the data, because you can't download it to your computer. And this is going to happen more and more. There's another telescope on basically being built, the Roman Space Telescope that NASA's building, that was approved in that same decadal report. And astronomers are about to be, crunched by big data. And
I can tell Saga has a question for you. Saga?
Well, I'm over here and I oversee that Ralph also is up and up on NASA over here.
Well, I did bring in a story, believe it or not. And this is when
a NASA-related story?
Believe it or not, yes.
Yeah, actually, no, I do believe it.
From a specific telescope, I believe, in Chile, something about a new comet that's been discovered. You know about this? Atlas 31 or 31 Atlas?
Oh, yes. This is the third object that is coming into our solar system from outside.
So there have been
the first one attracted a lot of attention, and there was a professor who I will not name who said, oh, well, maybe it's an extraterrestrial spaceship.
Boom.
Which is generally in astronomy, that's supposed to be the last hypothesis you put forward. This is the third one that has been it's coming past our solar system with such a high velocity, what's called a hyperbolic trajectory, that we know it's coming from outside our solar system. It can't be part of the comets and asteroids that have been orbiting our sun for billions of years. It's coming from the outside. And so it's going to be another opportunity to basically see something that comes from outside our own little solar system.
Okay, so back up. The last thing you can hypothesize is that there's a spaceship.
Well, generally you try to, you try to work with the more like ordinary things, like that's a rock.
Yeah, it's like when something breaks into your tent and it's going after the Kentucky Fried Chicken, you think bear, not robot bear.
That's usually... I don't think that.
You don't think robot bear? Some people do.
I'll think if there's KFC in there, I'm in the wrong tent.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is right now, science is so counterculture, right? I mean, it's like...
Yes.
It's never like, been more counterculture.
Never been. Out there, dangerous, radical.
So is this telescope have new technology? Is that why it's so powerful? Is it a mirror telescope, or how is that?
That's Eleanor, by the way.
It's a new telescope, the technology is really amazing. For one thing, it's a telescope that can turn super fast. It's gigantic. Right. I forget the size of the mirror now. Should know that. I'm going to guess 8 meters, but it might be even larger than that. But it essentially can turn on a dime, which is most telescopes, it's like tick, tick, tick. They're gradually moving across the sky, but this thing can go whoop, whoop, whoop.
Wow.
So in addition to the optics, the optical design, the rapid, the high sort of the motors that can move it across the sky, I mean, the detector itself is really the highlight of the telescope. It's just like building a gigantic detector like that is really, again, pushing the limits of technology. And And it's working like a charm. I mean, you sort of feel it's the same kind of feeling as we've had about the JWST, the James Webb Space Telescope, where, I mean, the James Webb Space Telescope is a marvel of technology. You know, it had 300 and something failure points, and it managed to get through all of them and has been producing amazing images. It's the largest telescope in space, but it had required like several different areas of technological development to get to that point. So this is similar.
Those images are incredibly cool.
Yeah, no, and you can just sort of zoom in and in and in. I mean, the best way to view these is they did actually create a sort of a website where you can sort of zoom in like you might zoom in on Google Maps, and you can pick this little thing and that little thing, and you know, you can definitely lose the forest for the trees.
Oh, I mean, well, I've got a plan then for what I do this weekend.
Looking
for trees?
Looking for trees in the solar system. Not in our solar system.
Well, I mean, it's basically the telescope looks through the solar system, it looks through the galaxy, and it looks out into as far as it'll go. And so in some directions, of course, we have a lot more galaxy. In other directions, it's all galaxies really, really far away. And the whole point of it is to both find things that go bump in the night, things that vary over time, stellar explosions and variable stars and you know, things in distant galaxies that we might not know about, but also to constrain the nature of the universe, in particular two major questions that we have, which is what is dark energy and what is dark matter, two things that we know dominate the mass and energy of the universe, but we don't know what they are. And so the telescopes that are being built right now are all basically designed to shed new light on these questions.
Cool.
I've got a difficult question.
Yeah.
What do you think the future of NASA and science looks like right now after all the latest political developments?
Oh, my gosh.
I know we don't have all the day here, but...
Probably people don't want to talk about the recent bill that just passed, but I did just see this. I did not notice it. It actually has $10 billion for Mars mission in there.
Really?
You know, yes. I went to NASA, the Johnson Space Center, when I was in Houston. I'm from Houston. I went there, and they have this was last December, they have a massive exhibit about this Mars mission, and they have job ads in this exhibit for, one, teachers. They're already looking for teachers for Mars and land surveyors.
Wow, I did not know
that's
this.
That's insane.
Anyway, so one of the tensions that has always been built into NASA is what to do for science, what to do for technology, and what to do for human spaceflight. Human spaceflight is probably the most well-known and popular part of what NASA does, but it's also the most expensive and difficult. And I think astronomers, if they had their way, it's like robots all the way. I remember when there was a politician who was giving a talk and saying, you know, we're going to build new robot fleets. And it's like, yay, robots. So we'll see what happens. I mean, essentially every administration that comes in has different priorities, but this is a very different kind of administration.
Yeah, I've been following the billionaire's bill, the big, beautiful bill. What were you calling it earlier? There's another B. There are many B words. Anyway,
bunker busting bill.
Yeah. Well, on Mother Jones this week, there's an article about what the $100 billion that is going now to ICE funding, what that $100 billion could have done. And I found some of the points in that article pretty interesting. So $100 billion could also pay for 2,000 Jeff Bezos and Lauren Sanchez weddings.
We need more of those.
Yeah.
One every day.
We could get 7.6 Rupert Murdochs with that money.
Wow.
And here's one that hits home. Yeah. 2.1 times, or with $100 billion, we could get 2.1 times what it would cost to hire enough teachers and nurses to end both shortages.
Yeah.
So I crunched some numbers of my own. I read this article and I went crunch, 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 because I was curious what $100 billion might look like here.
At WRT
in Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, my heavens above.
So if you wanna hear what my number crunching capacity is, here's what I got. With $100 billion, the state could cover its Medicaid costs 27 times.
Wow.
We could get 7,142 Goodman pools.
That's exactly the number I think we should have.
And we got to go to T-Moon for that. We could get, we could have with $100 billion. We could have 250 million minions.
That's a good number.
That's
too.
A good it's a good number. And then here's one that like makes me, I don't know, listeners out there. $100 billion could fund WORT for 100,000 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and Rockin' John will still be here.
Yeah.
So, you know, lay it out there.
We love you, John.
Oh, man. Very good. Oh, thank you so much for that. That really puts things in perspective, doesn't it? So where are we getting the money from in the meantime? That's what I want to know.
Wait, when you crunch the numbers for minions, how do you value a minion?
Well, I went to the Minion Premium on the WORT website.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
How much, how many, well, the problem, of course, is I'm going to, Companion's going to have to crunch the numbers because we're running out of numbers if we do that, everybody has a mindless minion card.
Well, I think we have.
Well, you run out of numbers, don't you? Don't you, Companion?
Oh, yeah, after maybe like 100, it's.
Yeah.
It's hard to count past
one,
that
two,
point.
And 100. Yeah, and then that's it.
Actually, I was just thinking because I'm actually involved in the Roman Space Telescope project, and one of the things they really want us to do is give a number for the number of stars we expect to measure to detect.
Really?
And it's sort of silly, but you know it's a bottom line number for any telescope. So the Rubin telescope is expected to detect about 17 billion stars and 20 billion galaxies out there in the universe.
Oh, that's all.
That's all. Yeah.
I would think that Il Duce would be in favor of the Roman Space Telescope.
And the Roman Space Telescope, which I should mention, is a name for Nancy Grace Roman, who was the first director of the Office of Space Science in NASA. Actually, she became the director of space science, or sorry, astronomy in NASA in 1958. And for many, many years, if you wanted to launch a rocket in the space with a telescope, you had to go through Nancy to get it.
And tell us what NASA means.
NASA. Well, according to astronomers at the time, they referred to NASA as Nancy and several associates. So the telescope.
Now Nancy's not alive.
She passed away. I guess about 3 or 4 years ago. Okay.
But she knew there was going to be a telescope named after her.
I don't actually think she lived to hear that. Okay. No, it's really sort of sad.
So to memorialize her.
Yeah, to memorialize her in the same way that the James Webb Space Telescope memorializes the director of NASA during the Apollo period. Okay. So it's sort of like you're naming the telescopes after the people that had a huge impact at NASA. And so that would be James Webb and Nancy Grace Roman. But yeah, so we estimate maybe that it'll detect 20 to 24 billion stars and with the Roman Space Telescope. But we could be wrong, give or take a billion. But I just thought, it's sort of, we're talking about numbers. The numbers in the budget are similar to the numbers of stars or galaxies that we could detect out there in space. So.
Now, Elmer Saga, do we have a science program on WRT anymore?
We do. It's called the Perpetual Notion Machine.
Okay. Right? PNM is still on Thursday nights at 7 or 7:30.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Excellent. So we had a little mini version of that here today.
It's okay.
Heard here first.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you guys for being here. We really appreciate it. And next week, we're going to have somebody that's going to come on and talk about, and I'm not saying these are similar kinds of things, but there's someone out there who is obsessed with the UW-Madison Humanities Building, and they're going to come on. And we're going to have a free and frank discussion of the positives and negatives of brutalist architecture, in particular the humanities building.
I mean, it was set up so you could put snipers up high, right? That's what I thought when
that's
I saw
what people it. Say. I think they were actually trying to make it look like a Greek temple or something, like a modern, kind of, again, brutalist version of that. That's my view. But anyway, we'll find out next week. So thank you guys for being here. And anything you want to say to the minions? You've got the mic here. Tell them to pledge more. I don't know. Whatever you want to.
It's definitely support the station. I mean, I still do, and I think everybody in the room probably does.
Yeah.
What a resource. I listen to other radio stations across the country, and nobody has this combination of news, public affairs, music, talk. comedy, whatever you want to call it.
Whatever this is.
I could hear the air quotes there. I think they heard it at home, too.
Well, I'd like to give it a shout out to anyone in Antarctica that's listening.
Very good. We have had.
I know there are listeners in Antarctica.
Yeah, there have been.
Because
yeah.
we have some Wisconsin folks that work down
there. Some people that were volunteers here who I think are in Antarctica now who definitely are listening. Because, yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And I have to. Oh, go ahead.
Before you do that, I've got something you should try instead of. I know you're married to the kazoo, but give this a shot.
Well, it's actually just a lover on the side. But anyway. So this is a modified. What is this thing? Is this
you'll find out.
Okay. Nothing happened.
Got something stuck in your throat there.
Sounds like the crypt is opening. I don't know. What is this supposed to be?
I think you just declared the opening to deer season.
Oh, that's very nice. Thank you so much. Where did you get that from, by the way?
I don't even remember anymore. You want it?
No, that's fine. I got enough.
Is it time to declare the weekend?
Yeah, that was what that was. But there's the other one. So thank you all, and we'll see you all next week. And this program goes out to you, Mel. Mel, we love you dearly,
and I
hope you can come back soon.
Come back, Mel.
Whenever you're feeling up to it.
Listening to WRT Madison and Who Cooks For You is up next.
Thanks, everybody.
Let me hear you.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, July 4th.
This is Bird Note. A mated pair of sharp-shinned hawks, swift, bird-catching predators, perch side by side, slender, dashing, gray and rufous hawks. The male is J-sized, just over 10 inches from the top of his head to the tip of his tail. The female, however, stands a head taller and weighs almost twice as much. This seems odd. In most birds, if the sexes vary at all in size, the male is larger. But with many hawks and falcons, the pattern is reversed. And female birds of prey are most notably bigger than males among hawk species that hunt very agile prey. Why is this so? Perhaps the female sharp-shinned hawk's larger size ensures that she may safely dominate the male through courtship and nesting, with a mate who is, after all, a highly aggressive bird hunter. The smaller male will tend to hunt smaller prey. The female will take somewhat larger prey, so together, they can tap a wider range of resources, including this unfortunate Douglas squirrel. Despite his smaller size, the dapper male is a good